Morning. Today's daf in the Dharma study Aleph. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learned with Zeich Nishmas. Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We are starting today on the bottom of Tzadi Mid Beis, and just a review of the Mishnah so that we can start with the Gemara. Actually, before we start with the Gemara today, the first thing we're going to look at inside is the Ran. The Mishnah had what's called the Mishnah Rishonah, Mishnah Achronah. Mishnah Rishonah just simply means that there was an original position taken by the Chachamim, and then Mishnah Achronah is that they revamped their position and they took a second position. What's Mishnah Rishonah? So if you look back at the Mishnah, so Mishnah Rishonah basically says that there are three occasions where a woman says something, and based on just her testimony with no other supporting evidence, we believe her. And in the three cases that are brought down the Mishnah, that would mean that there would Chachamim would force a get between the husband and wife, basically tell the husband that because of what she said, you have to divorce her. And on top of that, she's no talis ksuva, she also gets to receive her ksuva as well. What are the three cases in Mishnah Rishonah? So the three cases are, number one, Tamehani Lach, where the woman, an Ashes Kohen, she's married to a Kohen, and she says, unfortunately, I was violated. The halach is that she can no longer be with her husband. And because she's an Ashes Kohen, she has to get a divorce, and she's going to receive her ksuva. We believe her on the statement of Tamehani Lach.
Can she marry somebody else?
Huh?
Can she get married to somebody else?
She'll marry somebody else. Number two, right, but not a Kohen, that's correct. Number two, the Shamayim Beni Levenech. So she makes a very personal comment about her husband, and that is her husband is not potent. It's Ein Yorek Echet, it doesn't shoot like an arrow. And so she says that basically what's going to happen is that I'm not going to get pregnant. So a very personal comment about the intimacy between her and her husband. And she's basically saying we're not going to have children. Now the Ran points out, I mentioned the Ran yesterday, I'll just mention it quickly again today. The Ran points out that in of itself is not enough for grounds for divorce because she's not mitzvah in the mitzvah puruvu. So the Ran points out that really what she has to claim is that it's not only that we're not going to have children, but I need the children to take care of me in my old age, which as we've seen throughout the Gemara is a valid claim. And as long as she makes that claim, so once again, she can demand a divorce. And again, there's no supporting evidence other than just simply her statement, and we believe her. And in the third case in the Mishnah is Netula Ani Mina Yehudim. Netula Ani Mina Yehudim is the idea that she just anatomically, she's experiencing Tashmish with a tremendous amount of pain, and she basically says, I'm not going to have relations not with you and not with anyone, right? Not with any Jewish person, meaning anyone who's a candidate for me. Because Bia is just so painful. So once again, it's something which is a personal experience for her, and in the Mishnah Rishonah, so we say that there's no she doesn't need supporting evidence, so all she needs is her claim and her statement, and that would be enough, and we're going to believe her. That's all Mishnah Rishonah. And then the Mishnah goes on to tell us that Chazru V'Amru, they then revisited this scenario, and they changed their positions. And basically, as I explained yesterday, just to reiterate again, the concern now basically is that she's making these statements, but not because she, not because they're true, but simply because she wants to marry somebody else. Somebody else caught her attention. She's interested now in somebody else. She wants to get out of this marriage. So basically, she's going to use one of these catchphrases in order to get out of the marriage. So the Chachamim said, now that we're concerned with that, so therefore, basically, in all these three of these cases, she's not believed. The Mishnah gives some advice in terms of what should be done. So in the first case, for example, if she says Ishus Kohen, she says she's nanas, so she's going to need some supporting evidence in order to validate her side of the story. Case number two, Shamayim Beni Levenech. So the Mishnah says Yasu Derech Bakasha. The Ran explained that to mean that he should try to appease her, right? Take her out to a nice dinner, but try to appease her. And finally, in Tula Anim in a Yehudim, if the woman says I'm going to be forbidden to all men, so he should do hafara to his portion of the neder. Remember, we discussed time and again how hafara you could do surgically. You can be made for part of the neder, even though you're not being made for the entire neder. So he'll be made for his portion of the neder, and they'll remain married. Basically, in Mishnah Achrona, she's not believed because of a fear, of a concern that that she was interested in somebody else, and she just wants to get out of the marriage. No, what, in the third case you're talking about? In the third case, she's just saying it because she wants to. In other words, it's not true what she's saying. She just knows that if she says it, she's getting out of the marriage. That's the concern. Okay, a really important Ron I mentioned yesterday. We're going to start today with the Ron. We'll start today with the Ron. So, Ika Lameidak, you can take a look at the Ron inside. I'm going to go through a lot of it inside. It's really significant just in terms of understanding of the Mishnah. About seven lines from where the lines get wide. It's the end of the line. Ika Lameidak Amas Nisan, Kevin de Medina Damra Tameani Lach, Mitzra Abala, Kemisha Rishona, Mishum Shalote Heno Tenesena Ba'acher, Hech Hitirua. The Ron asks such a powerful question. Meaning, what is it? What is the strict letter of the law? Is Mishnah Rishonah the strict letter of the law, Mishnah Achronah? So we're going to assume, at least for most of the Ron, that Mishnah Rishonah is really a strict letter of the law, which means that when she makes a statement, she's an Eishes Kohen. Let's go, the first example is the best example that illustrates the Ron's question. When she's an Eishes Kohen and she says Anusa, she says she was violated. So that means now that according to the strict letter of the law, she's believed. Because she would not make that kind of statement unless it were true. Fine. So that means that according to the strict letter of the law, she's believed. And what does that mean? It means that she's prohibited to her husband. That's why in Mishnah Rishona, the Chachamim will demand a divorce, and she's entitled to her ksuva. Fine. What the Ron wants to know is, and what happens now by Mishnah Achrona? By Mishnah Achrona, the Chachamim said, yeah, we're worried that you're really making up a story, so therefore she is not going to be believed until she brings in supporting evidence. The Ron says, but I don't understand. If, according to the strict letter of the law, she's believed, if the Torah believes her, so now she's prohibited to her husband. How can the Chachamim sanction a marriage, which according to the strict letter of the law, is really not a sanctioned marriage? It's a very powerful question. And the Ron says, Yesh mishatir etz afagav di medina asir esh arolei rabbanan, omevat le milsa da araysa misham migdar milsa bekom asay. De gedr gadol gidruba, shalotitein eineha ba'acher lafkia atzmam yad ba'ala. Vereshuz biyadam lasos kein. So the Ron's first answer, which is just not unbelievable, it's totally believable, the Ron says it, but just like, you know, requires a lot of thought, is the Ron's first answer is, Chachamim could do that. Meaning, that even though really, according to the strict letter of the law, she's believed. She has nemanus to make the statement. And even though that would now mean that she and her husband are really prohibited to one another, so here the Chachamim can step in and override. Override the halacha that they're prohibited to one another, and the Chachamim say, yeah, but you know what? We're gonna allow the marriage to perpetuate and to continue, even according to the strict letter of the law. The marriage really should be they really should get a divorce from one another. And the Ron says that the Chachamim have the right to override and to legislate, even though it goes against the Torah. Okay, Kedamri Nabi Avamos, Megdar Milsa Shani, V'Hikshu Al Zeh. And the Ron says, now that I offer this as a suggestion, this is a very difficult answer. Look, Chachamim can override the Torah, but only in a passive fashion. The Chachamim can tell you not to do something to uproot something in the Torah. Right? A perfect example coming up, Rosh Hashanah, although this Rosh Hashanah is not coming up, but we know that if Rosh Hashanah falls on a Shabbos, the Chachamim say, don't blow shofar. Don't blow shofar. What do you mean? It's the mitzvah in the Torah. Okay, for the Chachamim, for whatever reason, can override the mitzvah of tkiyah shofar b'sheva al taseh by telling you not to do anything. Over here, the halacha is that they shouldn't be married. And the Chachamim say to them, no, it's okay. We're going to override and we're going to say, remain married. So every time they have intimacy with one another, they're violating the Torah, not b'sheva al taseh, b'kum v'aseh. So the Ron says it's a very difficult answer. Inam may become a seyla rasha belvad, or the Ron says sometimes the Chachamim can override, but the override of the Torah could be become vasei, but only for a moment. Like as a classic example, Eliyahu Bahar Kamel. Eliyahu, who built a bama on Har Carmel and offered a carbon outside the base of Mikdash, that's not right, and he's overriding the Torah. But he's doing so for a moment, for just one time. Avaladoros lo, but not for generations. So basically, if you're telling me that the Chachamim are going to be able to override the Torah gives her the credibility. Really, she should not be with her husband. And the Chachamim say, yeah, but you know what? To preserve the marriage and the institution of marriage, the Chachamim are legislating that the marriage should perpetuate, even though they're forbidden to one another. And how can the Chachamim do that? Because they can override the Torah? The Ron says, not on a regular basis, they can't do that. Not bekumasei. So to that, the Ron goes on to say, Ula didi lo kashali, dichi hechadamin, bekamaduch, the chome kasha, daita the rabbanan vafkin, rabbanan, lukadusha mine. Hachanami hacha, kosha armalabala, to me aneach, afkin, rabban lukadusha mikara, venimsish, beshashanensa, penuya haisa. So the Ron over here now invokes the following idea. Maybe the argument you can make over here is as follows. How can this marriage sustain? He's a Kohen, she's an Eishes Kohen. She claims that she was violated. Really, she has credibility. And the Chachamim say, I know she has credibility, but the marriage is going to sustain. How can that be? So the Ron makes an offering. He suggests, well, maybe it's based on the principle of called the Mekadesh. We know that marriage is a marriage with the approval of the Chachamim, and the Chachamim, under limited, very limited circumstances, can uproot the marriage, called the Mekadesh, Adaita the Rabbanim Mekadesh, and so they have the ability to uproot the marriage, and the Ron suggests that maybe that's what's going on over here. Maybe during the period of her being an Anusa, maybe what the Chachamim did is they removed the marriage, so that while she was an Anusa, she was Penuya, she was not married, and then you don't have the problem of her being violated while she was married to a Kohen.
Retroactive, though.
Meaning, I try to figure out how this works exactly. Meaning that they're married to the point of her being an Anusa. Then the Chachamim extracted that marriage. Then what did they do? They then put it back in again. They kind of plugged in the marriage, unplugged the marriage, and plugged it in again. It's not totally clear to me how it works. But again, the problem I understand, the solution a little bit less, but okay, as I mentioned, it's an important round. It really cuts into some of the underpinnings of what's going on over here. Yes.
So why can't we say the husband is disputing the wife? You want to know what's going on?
But he doesn't know. In other words, you can dispute something when you have knowledge and information. When you don't know anything, you have nothing.
Meaning to investigate, it's his word again.
It's not his word. He doesn't know. In other words, well, you could be disputing when you have, right? I say I lent you money, you say no, you didn't. Okay, each one of us have a leg to stand on because both of us, each one of us feel like I'm right and you feel you're right. In the case where she comes and she says she was violated, she has information, he has nothing.
Don't you say that in terms of her own body, she's got an amount for that?
Right, that's the starting point of the whole discussion. Right. The starting point of the whole discussion is she's credible. So that explains wonderfully Mishnah Rishona. But then when you get to Mishnah Achrona, so how did the Chachamim take away that credibility? That's what the Ron is trying to figure out. That's what we're struggling with here. So halacha kol she'amar labala to me ani afkin rabban l'kedusha mikara v'nimtza she'b'shasha nemtza p'nei ha'isa mishum ha'chishai labala v'chelas namin b'tshuma k'damin b'gemara. Okay. Elos she'lefi zem mitzarech lama d'chiyamin ha'chi dafka bar mes to me ani lach she'anasti u'lekashin evalti. Now, to make this a legitimate and plausible claim that the Chachamim removed the Kedushin, that's only if she had beer with a kasher. Aval b'almeres to me ani lach she'anasti minasino mamzer eina matar sabala ve'eina b'mashma. So, but the problem, of course, says Iran, is that if the claim is not only that she was violated, but that she was violated to someone who was puzzled to her, which would make her puzzled to her husband, regardless of whether she was married or not married, i.e., he was in a sin, i.e., he was a mamzer, so then all this, of course, is not going to work, and the solution is not going to work. The acherim tirtzum. Now, there's another way to approach this whole problem, and that is, let's change our entire assumption. We assume going into the problem that the Mishnah Rishona represents the basic halacha, and the Mishnah Achrona is the Chachamim's, so to say, tinkering with the basic halacha. What we can now suggest, says Iran, is we can go the other way. Mishnah Achrona really represents the true halacha, and Mishnah Rishona is really where the Chachamim tinker. So the Mishnah Rishona lo dina katani, the medina vada ina isha ne'emanas lomar tamei anilach lafki atzma mibala shehim shubedes lo. So really, what it could be, again, he doesn't say who's saying this answer. Obviously, it's a Rishon. The Ron is quoting it, but maybe you could say that really she doesn't have ne'emanas. And really, the strict letter of the law is that a woman who makes a claim that she was violated with no supporting evidence, just her statement alone, is not enough for her to leave the marriage. So, but the Ron says, but what happens in Mishnah Rishona? She's making a claim that's so mortifying, it's so embarrassing, aside from all the emotional pain that she had to endure. But just even admitting it, it's unless it were true, she wouldn't have said it. So in Mishnah Rishona, even though the strict letter of the law is that she's not believed, but the Chachamim said, yeah, but the likelihood is that she's telling the truth. So that's why in Mishnah Rishona, they gave her, they meaning the Chachamim, gave her the credibility so that now the marriage is going to come to an end and she's going to get her ksuva. So Mishnah Rishona doesn't represent the baseline halacha, it represents the Chachamim's takana. And then what happens is that, again, now that people in general are more chutzpahdik, and people will say things that are outlandish. So then in Mishnah Rishona, what do? They go back on the basic halacha. Chachamim were worried that maybe she was looking at another man, interest in another man, only trying to extract herself from the marriage because of another man, Ukma Adina. Now we go back to the basic halacha, which is Mishnah Achrona. So really, just a fascinating run, which is really a basic discussion of which is really representing the basic halacha. Is it Mishnah Rishona that she's credible, or is it Mishnah Achrona which says that she's not credible? And the Ran addresses both possibilities. The second possibility is a little bit neater, because in the second possibility, you don't have to deal with the problems of how could she remain with her husband? If really she's credible, what allows the Chachamim to allow this marriage to persist? And employing answers of the Chachamim are overriding the Torah, or Afkin Rabban LeKedusha Minei, right? Those are powerful ideas, but the implementation of those ideas in the Mishnah. So the second side of the Ran is a little bit easier, but the first side of the Ran is certainly, I guess, more interesting in terms of how the Chachamim can allow marriage to maintain, even though the marriage should not continue.
Is there any way to impose a 3-month waiting period before she gets back with her husband?
It's an interesting question. I don't know the answer.
Like
I understood. It makes sense. Okay. Ibai Lahu. Let's start with the Gemara. We're now on Sadi Mud Beis. We're starting today with the Gemara. Amar Labala Tamani Mao Shetochal Bitruma. Okay. Now, what we learned together is that if a woman is an Ashes Kohen, says to her husband, I was violated, so according to Mishnah Achrona, so she's not believed and she continues the marriage. Question. Can she continue eating truma? Meaning, when the Chachamim continue this marriage, do they not only continue the marriage in terms of husband and wife, but giving her all the rights and benefits of being an Eishes Kohen? I mean, she did make the claim that she was violated. So Rav Sheshet says, of course she can eat truma, because imagine for just a moment she can't eat truma. What are people going to say about her subsequent children? Well, you know, I know they continue to be married, but she no longer was able to eat truma, and people are going to suggest that it must be because she was violated, and maybe the children are not his children. So therefore, let her continue to eat truma. And Rava says, no, she's not going to eat truma anymore. What about what people are going to say? No, people are not going to say anything, says Rava, because she can eat. The only thing she'll have to avoid is truma. Truma is not the only thing in the cupboard. There are other kinds of foods in the house. So the marriage will continue and she won't eat truma. So Rav Sheshet says, but I'll give you this. Rava says, I'll give you this. Even though Rav Sheshet says that she can continue in truma, that's as long as they're married. But let's say she becomes a widow. So even according to Rav Sheshet, she's no longer going to be able to eat truma. First of all, if she's a widow, what would allow her to eat truma? Only one thing, and that is if they had kids. If they didn't have kids, so of course she wouldn't be able to eat truma anymore. But if they had kids, even Rav Sheshet would say that she can't eat truma. Why? So once she's widowed or divorced, and she's no longer with her husband, and now she has a child, right, obviously a Kohen, so she would theoretically be entitled to eat truma, but again, because she was violated during her marriage, and really, according to the strict letter of the law, she should not be eating truma, so therefore she shouldn't be eating truma after the marriage is terminated. And the only reason why Rav Sheshet says she can continue eating truma is so that people will not speak poorly about her children. After death or divorce, so no one's going to speak poorly anymore, because
she's at least a forensic if she eats the truma.
No, is she right? Just a small correction. Misa b'day shemayim. But okay, that doesn't change your question. The Chachamim, again, right, that again, that goes back to the Ran's discussion. Meaning, goes back to the Ran's discussion. Meaning, if really the second, if Mishnah Achrona, the second position is really the Ikar Hadin, so then we're fine. So then everything is fine. Then we can understand all this. According to the first position, it's harder of the Ran. That really the Mishnah Rishon represents the basic halacha, and the Mishnah Achrona is a rabbinic institution. All right. Amar Rapapa Badiklan Rava. Rapapa remembers how Rava used to test him. Okay, tests in school are, you know, not a bad thing. I know. Contemporary thought goes other way, but Badiklan Rava. But Rava would test us, and here's how the test would go. Eish is Kohen Ansa Yesh Ksuva Oin Laksuva. The wife of a Kohen, does she get a Ksuva? Does she not get a Ksuva if she was violated? Now we already know the answer because that's what we spent already the Mishnah discussing. But again, this is just a test. Kevin Danos Lagabi Kohen Karatz Lagabi Saw Dami Ein Laksuva. On one hand, you can make the argument that she's no longer entitled to a Ksuva because she has to leave her husband. It's kind of like Eishes Yisrael having willing relations with another man, where there she forfeits her ksuva. So maybe by Eishes Kohen you would say the same thing, even if she were violated. So, or maybe the other way to argue is that, look, she could say to her husband, I was violated. I did not commit adultery. And the fact that you have to divorce me, that's your tough luck. Meaning you're the Kohen. You're the one who unfortunately now can no longer live with me. It's not a me problem, it's a you problem. So Avamin Alei Masnisani. So the students passed the test. The students said, we know the answer. It's our Mishnah. It's the last Mishnah in the Darim. Now again, because we're learning the last Mishnah in the Darim, so like we already know it. But it's a better test when you weren't given any context, you weren't told where to look. And you have to know the Mishnahs backwards and forwards, inside and out. And then you have to, in other words, in your Rolodex of Mishnahs, now you have to go to the last Mishnah in Adarim and you have to figure it out. So it's good. Without having the context, the correct context, it's a really good test.
There's
nothing. Just, yeah. So the Mishnah goes on to say, so look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, a woman says, I was violated. So she leaves the marriage and she gets her ksuva. So be my skin. So if we're talking about the wife of a Yisrael, Ibaratz and Klum Yishla ksuva. So if she willingly had relations with another man, it's what we call adultery. So of course she's not going to get her ksuva. The Iba ones mikamitzra gavra. And if she was, God forbid, she was violated, so she doesn't have to leave her husband. So then, neither one of those fit into our Mishnah. Ve'elabeishes koheni beratzon klum yeshu ksuva. So migarim eishes Yisrael beratzon. Now, if we're talking about eishes kohen, so if we're talking about where she willingly had a relation with another man, so that also can't work in our Mishnah because she will leave the marriage and she's going to forfeit her ksuva. Alav ba'ones. So the only thing that fits into our Mishnah would be eishes kohen, and she was an anusa. Viktani yeshla ksuva. And what do we learn together in our Mishnah? That she is going to get her ksuva. Okay, they passed the test with flying colors. That's the only way to explain our Mishnah. Ibailu. Amalabar Gerashtani Mahu. A question which we've seen before come up in Shas. This is not the first time the Gemara is asking this question. And that is, a woman turns to her husband and says, you divorced me. Now, where is he in this discussion? It's the kind of thing where he was involved in. So where was he? Obviously part of the proceedings, but she is trying to get remarried. This is Ron's explanation of the Gemara. She's trying to get remarried. The Beis Din asks her, you know, you were married before. Are you divorced? She says, yes. They ask her, can you bring the get? She says, I'm really sorry. I lost it. Or it was torn up. Or, you know, it got burned in a fire. Oh, really? Interesting. So is where the witness is? She says, forget the witnesses. I'll just bring my ex-husband. She brings her ex-husband into court. She looks him right in the eye and she says, you divorced me. So now, under these circumstances, she's looking him right in the eye, right in front of Beis Din. And she says, you divorced me. Does she have credibility? Yes or no? So we start the discussion. Well, it's a question. Ibailahu. Amar labala gerashtani. Mahu. So Amar Rav Hamnuna Tashma. Ha meres to me anilach afil mishnah chorne dekani la mehemna hasamu de mishakra diad de dabala lo yadaba. Look. We can deduce the answer from our Mishnah. Because in our Mishnah, the example of Mishnah Achrona was where she says she was violated. In Mishnah Achrona, she's not believed. But the only reason why she's not believed is because she's saying something that cannot be substantiated as either being credible or as a lie. She's saying something which is just simply based on her word alone. Avagaba gerashani diyadaba mehemna. But over here, she has her husband right there in the room, her ex-husband, right there in the room. She's looking right at him. She's saying, you divorced me. He knows whether she's saying a bold-faced lie or she's telling the truth. We have a general presumption that a woman would not be that brazen where she would have her ex-husband in the room say that you divorced me, meanwhile it's not true. Chazaka. So Amale Rava Adarava. So Rava says, no, I'm going to disagree. I'm going to argue. I'm going to say that you can actually see from our Mishnah that she is not believed. Afila Mishnah Rishona Dikani Mehemna. Look, let's go to Mishnah Rishona of our Mishnah. Mishnah Rishona says that she's credible. A woman has credibility. So Hasa Mishim Delo Avida Livzui Nafsha. Over there, we're talking about a woman who was violated. That is mortifying. That's humiliating. A woman would not humiliate herself unless it were true. Avahacha Dezimna Detakif Lemin Gavra Meiza Meiza. But over here, she's saying she got divorced. Let's think for a moment that it's not true. Would she say something that humiliating? Gemara says sure. The husband is a train wreck. He's a total disaster. He's infuriating her. So, a woman's going to look at her husband and say, you divorced me even if it's not true? Rava says, yeah, I can see that. As opposed to the case of our Mishnah, where she's making the admission that she was violated, that is just simply mortifying. It's humiliating. Unless it were true, she wouldn't be saying it. So Rav Misharsha says, okay, let's consider the next case of our Mishnah. Next case of the Mishnah is her declaration of her husband's impotency. So the Mishnah Rishona Tiyufta Derava. Now in Mishnah Rishona, she's given credibility. So now, according to Rava, Rava says we don't believe the woman in the case of Gerishtani. Rava's argument is a woman would be that brazen. In Mishnah Rishona, she's making a claim of her husband's impotency, and it's not as mortifying, and meanwhile, she's credible. So, Hacha Delesle Kisufa Victana de Mehemna. The Gemara says, it's not that embarrassing. I mean, not that embarrassing to her, certainly embarrassing to him, but not that embarrassing, and yet she's believed. So, Kasav Rava, Hasam Kevin de lo Sagile de lo Amra, in Yorka Chetz, Ilo Isa Kede Kamar lo Amra Le. So, the Gemara says, Rava's defense would be as follows. What else is she supposed to say? Meaning, right? The fact of the matter is that her husband is impotent. She's the only one who possesses this information. What else is she supposed to say? Meaning,
but couldn't that be also independent and verified by the Chachamim?
The Gemara's assuming. Gemara's assuming no,
because there was a whole thing, but they discussed that.
I totally understand. The Gemara doesn't seem that okay.
In the past, but they've said there's signs that they could actually use.
Right. There may be helpful pieces of information. Okay, good. The Gemara right now is just assuming no, and based on that assumption, so now the Gemara is saying, but Rav is saying in his defense, what else is she supposed to say? Meaning she's just got to say that. So in the case of the Mishnah, again within Mishnah Rishona, she's credible, but again Gerashtani. What do you mean, what else is she supposed to say? Be better if she had a get? Or she could just simply be so angry with her husband that she's just making up the story. Okay, so now let's go to Mishnah Rishona on the wife's claim of impotency, where she's not believed. So isn't that a question of Rav Hamnuna? Again, Rav Hamnuna was taking the position that in the case of Gerishtani, she is believed. According to Mishnah Achrona, when a woman makes a claim which you can't validate, there's no verification, and according to Mishnah Achrona, she isn't believed. So v'achad yada hi u'bala yada ba v'ktani de la mehemna k'asav v'rav amnun achanami hi gufa amra nehida bebiya yada b'yor k'chet miyado mishum hachi mishakra. So Rav Hamnuna's defense would say as follows. The cases are not analogous. Because in the case of the wife's claim of impotency, it could be something where she knows and he doesn't know. Meaning, right, he knows that he can generally get through Bia. The idea of Yorah Kechetz, that whether or not he's going to be able to impregnate her, that's not something that he can recognize and have a proper sensation. It's something she can recognize and have a proper sensation. So in other words, this would be information that she and only she would know, and therefore subject to now her and only her statement. We don't have to believe her. That's Mishnah Achrona. As opposed to the case of Gerish Tani, where again, he obviously was an active participant in the act of Gerishin. She wouldn't have the chutzpah. So Rav Amnuna says, I could see a difference between the case of Gerish Tani and the case of Yorah Kechetz of our Mishnah. Okay, Adkan, where does the Gemara end on this topic? The Gemara ends awkwardly with no conclusion. Meaning, in a case where a woman says to her husband, Gerish Tani, again, they ask her, you got a divorce? She said, yeah. Where's the get? She said, not here. Right, for whatever reason. Okay, brings the husband in, and her claim of Gerish Tani, she believes or she not believes, so we have it as now in our Gemara, as a machlokes between... Okay, we're good. As a machlok is between Rav and Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna says she's believed, and Rav says she's not believed. And where does the Gemara end on this discussion? Inconclusive. So that brings us to the Rishonim. Take a look at the Ran, right in the middle of Tzadi Aleph Amid Aleph. Ula Inyan Halacha. Ran's on the left side. You should know this by now. 91st page of the Masechta. Ula Inyan Halacha. Kaimalan Kirav Amnuna. Deisha Sharmala Bala Gerishani Ne'emanin. I think, says the Ran, that the Halacha follows Kirav Amnuna, that a woman is believed. Desigim Bekulei Hashas Kavasei. So, look, this is not the first time we've discussed this topic in Shas. It's come up before. And generally in Shas, the Gemara favors the opinion of Rav Hamnuna. Okay. Umidamina Laila Masisan Shmamina Shalola Atira Bavadli Nasin Emanas Ella Afli Toksuva Dumid the Masisan Diktani Yotzas Venot Lotsuva. And look, where is this Gemara having the discussion of Gerashtani? In the context of our Mishnah. What happens in our Mishnah? She's entitled to get a ksuva. So too over here, the woman's entitled to get a ksuva. Okay. So, and the Ramban also agrees that the halacha goes like Rav Hamnuna, that a woman is generally believed when she says Gerish Tani. Okay, so the Ran sides with Rav Hamnuna on this topic.
Based on the husband doesn't give it yet, but there's a civil divorce, so she can say that she was divorced.
Okay. I mean,
there is no yet.
Okay, could be. Right, I hear you. Gemara doesn't think in those. The Gemara just thinks get in terms of get, meaning, you know, let's say modern.
So if she divorced,
modern innovation, the civil divorce. Okay, but okay. Again, it's it could be, but not certainly not germane to the Gemara's discussion. We are on the bottom of Tzadi Aleph Amid Beis. Ayisa Sadechul Yuma De Tashmish Mikdama Mashia Yadei Legavra. Okay, just in terms of general Hilchot Tznius, so there's a halacha that after Tashmish Shemitah between husband and wife, so you should wash your hands. So the Gemara tells a story. We're going to see a couple of stories. Awkwardly, can I tell you, the Gemaras that are coming up are going to be slightly indelicate, which is fine. It's a mature Gemara for a mature audience. But generally speaking, the Gemara usually ends off like on a nice, positive, agadic note, and you're not going to find that today. The Gemara, we're going to finish Masechta Nedarim. The Gemara is going to end off with a number of basic halachic cases of possible adultery and the Chachamim's determination of whether or not there was or was not adultery. It's kind of a strange way to end the Masechta. The Gemara in Nedarim doesn't end off with anything flowery or nice. Okay, just an observation. Generally speaking, in this first case that we're going to be discussing, we're going to go over a number of cases. In the first case we're discussing, the woman, generally speaking, every morning after they have Tashmish, the woman washes the hands of the man. Okay? Yumachar asyalei mai lamamasha. So, and then one very unfortunate and awkward morning, so she goes to wash his hands. So, and the reason why it's uncomfortable and awkward is because the husband is looking at her and saying, why are you trying to wash my hands? We didn't have relations the night prior. So, so then she realizes this is just terrible because she had relations the previous night. And if it's not her husband, it must have been with somebody. And so now the concern is that it was with one of the people in the community, right? Now, first of all, you have to say this. Iran does say this. Otherwise, the story is not going to really speak to us. That we're talking in this particular case that she's an Eishes Kohen. So because if we're talking about an Eishes Yisrael, look at the bottom round inside the Aleph Amad Aleph, second to last line. Eishes Kohen Haisa. This story has to be involved with an Eishes Kohen. The Eishes Yisrael came shafilu lafid vara savru Haisa shu baala, because if she was an Eishes Yisrael, she had relations the night prior with a man. She thought that man was her husband. So ein lecha anas gadol mizeh. That's called onis. That's not adultery. That's circumstances beyond her control. The onis v'yisrael mishra shari. She would still be permitted to her husband. So it has to be that this particular case we're discussing is where he was a Kohen.
If she didn't know, what would be onis? I mean, onis is like, she had no other option.
So what we're like learning, we're learning together now, this is also onis.
It's talit, no.
Okay. And I understand that, but in the category, in the context of husband and wife, that's what we're learning now. So this is also onus. So we'll go back to the Gemara. We're on the top of Tzadi Alpha Mid Beis. So it must have been somebody else. So the round on the top, Nochrim Mochre Ohel, is right. Non-Jewish people selling aloe, passing through town, so it must have been one of them. So Antelo Dilma Minhon. So she says to her husband, if it was not you, it must have been one of them. So Amar Rav Nachman Einei Nasan Ba'achir Veleis Beim Shasha Bemila. So the case came in front of Rav Nachman. Now again, this basically takes us to our Mishnah. Meaning within our Mishnah, what did we learn? We learned that there was Mishnah Rishonah and there was Mishnah Achrona. What happened between Mishnah Rishonah and Mishnah Achrona? Basically, we have a general suspicion now that women will say things in order to get out of their marriage, and that they're not going to be believed. That's basically what took us from Mishnah Rishonah to Mishnah Achrona. So Rav Nachman is basically taking the idea and applying it over here. Right? She made a statement. Again, basically what she's saying is, I was with another man. No validation, no substantiation. It's just her word. So that's not going to be enough to terminate the marriage. And the marriage will sustain. Okay. Next story. In this story, we're given a little context. They're just, husband and wife are not enjoying each other's company. Right? Literally, the word translates, bedicha daita. Right? Kind of like a jovial mind. Right? In other words, usually the marriage is good. So people are happy. Over here, there's just a misery between husband and wife. So, amrle ha'idna maishna. So, amrle me'olam lo tsar san bederech eretz ki ha'idna. So he asks her, what's wrong? So she says that the bia between me and you is very painful. And im kain halenachrin, I'm sorry. So ki ha'idna, amar la, I skipped a line, important line. Amar la, lo hava hadamilsa ha'idna. So he says to her, I know what you were talking about. Meaning you're saying that bia last night was very painful. We didn't have bia last night. So Amar Le Im Kain Halinachrin Naftuya Davahacha Ha'ina Iant Lo Demachaminon. So she says, "Oh, it wasn't you. Oh well, there was these spice merchants coming through town, and it must be then that one of them was having relations with me." So Amar Lehu Rav Nachman Lo Tashkichumba No Sanasei Nabachir Havai. So once again, the case came in front of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman consistent, and with what he said previously, basically she's saying that she had relations with another man. Again, in the context of her claim, she didn't know it was another man. She thought it was her husband, But again, and again, we're going to have to say the same thing. Again, this is talking about a case where the husband was a Kohen. But still, Rav Nachman's saying, she's saying this basically to get out of the marriage. She's making a claim that is unsubstantiated. There is no other evidence to it other than that which she's saying. So Rav Nachman says it's not enough to terminate the marriage. Okay. So there was a man who comes into the house together with somebody's wife. They were in seclusion with one another. And in comes the balabais, the owner of the house and the husband come into the house. Parte noef lahutza va'arak. So what does the suspected adulterer do? So he runs out of the house. He breaks through a palm branch wall in order to escape and leave the house. So Amar Rava, he says, Sasharya. So now the commander comes in front of Rava. And basically the question is, was she in Ephes? Did she commit adultery? Meaning all we have is circumstantial evidence. It's pretty strong circumstantial evidence. There was another guy in the house, but what are we saying? So the matter comes in front of Rava, and Rava says, permitted. Meaning, again, we're not talking about the general state of their marriage. We're talking about, halachically, are they permitted one to another at this juncture? So Rava says, yeah, yes, absolutely. Because his argument goes like this. Im isa de avad isura irkasa hava mirkas. Rava says it's almost like a psychological point, meaning that if in fact that this man actually committed adultery, so he wouldn't be running in broad daylight outside the house, but he would have hidden. In other words, he wouldn't have wanted his identity known. He wouldn't have wanted to keep his identity a secret. And the fact that he revealed himself is an indication that they didn't actually have relations. Okay. Once again, we have a suspected adulterer who goes into the house of a wife. Asagava salik noef, asev bikil ay bava, havamachtan. So this potential noef goes and he hides. He hides behind the curtain. Have a machlan tachle taman vitain and chivya. Now there was some sort of vegetable, I think they translate it as cress, but either way, there was some sort of vegetable that the noef saw was being bitten by a snake. In other words, so what the snake did is he inserted his venom into the vegetable. So bar ma'ya debes lamechamen hanu tachle below daita the intita, and now. So let me just try to paint the picture a little bit clearer so you understand. So again, there's a potential adulterer in the room. Okay, husband comes home, the adulterer, the possible adulterer, the suspected adulterer goes and hides. But the suspected adulterer sees what's going on in the room and sees that the husband is about to eat a poison-infested vegetable. And so, with hopefully now a clear picture of what's happening, Amalei Ahunoef Delecho Velemos. So, I skipped an important line. So now the adulterer pops out of his hiding place and says to the husband, "Oh, don't eat that vegetable. You're gonna die. And so don't do that." Okay. I'm a Rava. To that which now Rava says, good. Good meaning. There's not a lot of good in the story, but here's what's good. Good meaning that the Noef is not, even though he was a suspected adulterer, he didn't commit adultery. Even though he was in the room together with your wife, but I'm telling you, he didn't commit adultery. Why not? So once again, he's going to employ an argument, a psychological argument. So, Amarava, instance of Sharye. Your wife is permitted. Imizu David Yisura. Nichalei delecho velemos. Because if he really committed adultery with your wife, he'd be more than happy. You eat the vegetable and you die. The fact that he popped out of hiding in order to protect you from eating the poisonous vegetable means that he didn't commit adultery with his wife. Dichsiv kinafu v'dam b'yadayim. The pasuk Yecheskel says that niuf leads to murder. Okay, if he committed niuf, If he committed adultery, so then he'd be more than happy that you died. The fact that he saved you is an indication that there was actual no adultery that was committed. To which the Gemara says, Pshita. Now, it's funny, the Gemara didn't say this on the first argument of Rava, but on the second argument of Rava, this seems to be obvious. The Gemara says it's not so obvious. Gemara gives a fascinating insight. Could very well be that he did commit adultery. Why is he saving the husband? Because maim genuvim yimtaku, because stolen water is sweeter. Meaning water is great, but when you steal the water and you drink the water that's stolen, it's even better. Not endorsing, not condoning, just explaining a psychological reality, a human trait reality. And that is that when you steal something, it's a little bit sweeter that way. It's, you know, you got a little rush, an endorphin rush, right? It's just better. So it could very well be that in the psyche of this Noef, he actually would have preferred that she remain a married woman. So that's the Havamina that went into what you might have thought is that he really did commit Niyuf, and still he wanted to preserve the life of this husband. So Kamashwan, the Chiddush is no. That's Rav is saying I don't side with that Havamina. I think that he saved her, an indication that he didn't save him, I should say, the husband, indication that he did not violate Niyuf. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Perek, end of the Masechta. Tomorrow, bring your Masechta Nazir. Okay, for me it's the same volume. Okay, and so starting tomorrow, next 65 days. So we get to learn Masechta Nazir. I'll talk more about it tomorrow. Rashi does not make an appearance again in Masechta Nazir. There's somebody on the side, looks like Rashi. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. In the meantime, and there's no Ryan also in Nazir as well, so we're gonna miss him. it is. He's so clear. Okay, Adkan. We tomorrow we continue with the new Masechta.